Hello, and welcome to this podcast produced by the International Monetary Fund. I'm Bruce Edwards. Sub-Saharan Africa is feeling the effects of falling commodity prices. The IMF's latest regional economic outlook predicts the lowest growth rates in 6 years and notes some countries have very little savings to draw from while they make the adjustment.
In fact, many countries are entering this period with larger fiscal and external deficits than they did at the time of the global financial crisis.
Céline Allard heads the Regional Studies Division in the IMF's African Department and oversaw the writing of the report.
So the big takeaway in this report, obviously, is low commodity prices and how that's impacting the region, especially the oil exporters. But the growth rate in the region remains still one of the highest in the world. What's driving the growth amid all this turmoil?
So you're right that we're projecting now growth for sub-Saharan Africa at 3.75 for 2015 and 4.25 for 2016. This is indeed higher than in many other developing and emerging regions in the world. But at the same time, we need to be aware that it's also lower than what sub-Saharan Africa has experienced in the recent past. And just last year, the growth rate was 5%. So there is a slowdown in the region. To understand that, it's useful to step back and look at the key factors that have driven growth in the past. And we see three main factors. The first one, and perhaps the most important, is the vastly improved business and macroeconomic environment that have been put in place by the authorities in the region. And so we have better institutions, better governance, better macroeconomic policies. We also have, in many countries in the region, very strong investment efforts that are still around and supporting growth. The two other factors are the high commodity prices and the very accommodative global financial conditions that have prevailed in the recent past and that have helped investment in the region. And those two factors have become far less supportive, and that's why we're seeing that slowdown.
And there are countries noted in the report that are seemingly unaffected by what's going on, or almost, like Botswana, Seychelles. What's their secret? Is there something to learn from what those countries are doing?
So not all countries are slowing down severely. I mean, there are 45 countries in the region, so that means also a lot of variation across the region. And the most notable is that in low-income countries, in many countries among that group, countries are still growing very solidly. We see countries like Côte d'Ivoire, Ethiopia, Tanzania still growing at 7% or more and forecast to do that, to grow at that rate again next year. What we see in this region, as I mentioned, is that very strong investment efforts still in place to improve infrastructure and strong private consumption. But on the other hand, I mean, you also have oil exporters that are very hard hit, because what they're seeing is that the export values are going down and the fiscal revenue are very affected. So they have to adjust their fiscal. And both of these effects are slowing down growth very severely. And then you have middle-income countries where things are more mixed, Ghana, Zambia, South Africa, where activity is weighed down by difficult financing condition, low commodity prices, and also electricity shortages.
For so many years, many of these countries made huge profits during what's referred to as the super cycle, when commodities were really high, and that was for an extended period of time. Yet the report shows that most countries in the region have very little savings. Do they have infrastructure improvements to show for the money that they made, or where did that money go?
So you're right that some of the difficulties that some countries are experiencing are compounded by the low savings that they've made during the period of high growth. In fact, many countries are entering this period with larger fiscal and external deficits than they did at the time of the global financial crisis. And as you know, at that time, it had helped them that they could dip into these buffers to smooth a little bit the shock that was happening to them in 2008 and 2009. This time around, they don't have those buffers. Why is that? So you're right to mention that for many countries, they've used the money they were getting from that super cycle to invest in much needed infrastructure investment. And we're seeing the fruits of those investments coming out, like, for example, in Kenya, in Ethiopia, in Guinea. Now there's new electricity production that's coming from those investments, and that's very welcome. But also what happened is that countries also saw that those high commodity prices were here to last for a very long time. And that maybe they stayed a little bit too optimistic and they didn't replenish the buffers they had dipped in at the time of the global financial crisis.
How big of a problem is the growing fiscal debt in many of these countries? And is the problem perhaps compounded by a strong U.S. dollar?
So first, let me make the point that for the region as a whole, debt has not increased very strongly. I mean, debt remains for sub-Saharan Africa as a whole around 40% of GDP, which is not excessively high. However, there are some countries where debt has increased of late, mostly countries that have access to or have increasingly had access to international markets, which means this is debt at non-concessional terms. And those countries that have increasingly borrowed in dollars are, of course, affected by the appreciation of the dollar because that increases the burden of debt payment in domestic currency.
The report also talks about the security risks in certain countries in the region, particularly attacks by Boko Haram in Chad and Cameroon, Nigeria. How does security impact the economy?
I mean, first, it just prevents people from working. I mean, they don't go to the field for agriculture. Trade is impacted. In some countries like Kenya, it has also an impact on tourism. So immediately, it has an impact. It also weighs on the fiscal purse because countries have to increase their security spending. And then over the longer term, it clearly has an impact on investor sentiment, and you get less investment. That means you get less growth.
There's a whole chapter in the report that focuses on improving competitiveness in the region. The focus there is really on increased manufacturing or trying to increase manufacturing in the region. How does a country do that when their economy is under such pressure?
So the starting point for that chapter was that the tailwinds for growth are dissipating, or at least some of the tailwinds are dissipating, and the countries will need to find new sources of growth if they want to sustain the good growth performance that they've had in the recent year and continue to make improvements in terms of inclusion and poverty reduction. So to be able to do that, countries will need to be competitive, be able to compete on regional and international markets so that they can export their production. And we looked at the range of indicators, and what we found is that the growth that was in some country driven by high commodity prices, I mean, especially among commodity exporters, has masked actually a deteriorating trend in terms of competitiveness. So there is action that needs to be done. The infrastructure investment needs to continue. There needs to be better access to electricity, to transportation, all those things that help make investors feel that this is the right environment to invest. Mm.
Yes. the countries that, as you said, some countries have done a good job at, while they were, making money with commodities, to invest it in the infrastructure. But other countries that haven't managed to do that, what is the scenario now? I mean, is it still a good time for them to be investing? Can they still attract private investors in their infrastructure projects, or is that sort of all history now?
Not necessarily. I mean, I think, of course, the lower price of commodity is going to affect investors' interest. But we're talking here about investment outside the extractive sector. And if the authorities want to support new sources of growth, I mean, just having a conducive business environment and continuing to make those efforts to upgrade both the physical capitals, that is to say infrastructure, and the human capital, that is what the skills people have to bring, that could help. Now, you're right to point that countries are under fiscal pressure, so how are they going to finance that? And perhaps something that could provide more sustainable sources of financing is to make further effort for domestic revenue mobilizations. I mean, basically, raise more revenue in the country because when you raise more revenue, this provides financing that is not increasing debt.
So in other words, increasing tax revenues.
Making efforts to improve tax collections, making sure that we can, in a sustainable way, bring in the informal sector into the tax net. I mean, what we've seen, we look at that in more detail in the report, we've seen that for the region as a whole, excluding Nigeria, which is an exception, tax revenue have increased from 18% in 2000 to 21% in 2015. So that's indeed, you know, already a good source of financing. And what we do is we look at experience elsewhere in the world, and we see actually that there's a further potential for increase of domestic revenue of between 3 and 6.5% for sub-Saharan Africa. So working on that front, I mean, it's not going to happen overnight, but continuing to make the efforts that the authorities have already made to further increase revenue mobilization would provide the necessary source of financing for those kinds of efforts.
That was Céline Allard, head of the Regional Studies Division in the IMF's African Department, talking about the latest regional economic outlook for sub-Saharan Africa. You can read the full report at imf.org. And if you'd like to hear more podcasts like this one, go to soundcloud.com/imf-podcasts.